are live, and we'll give everybody just a few seconds to log on here. I know I published it on my Facebook pages and tagged our esteemed guest today. You guys both went with your professional profiles. I should have done that. I just went with my first name, but excited to have Drs. Juanita Webb and Dr. Scott Thor with me on the broadcast today. And so a bit about what we're doing. One of the things that we have heard in our various circles that we run in is that there needs to be a Bakersfield mastermind, a group of local business-minded professionals, especially in the midst of the current pandemic and rules and regulations, and what do I do with my employees, and how does all of this play out? And so having kind of pitched the idea to them, they said, hey, we've heard similar things, let's explore this. And we think that one of the great ways that we can do this and talk about what it actually means to be a business owner in the midst of the current economic situation in America, whether you are Bakersfield, California-based, or anywhere right now, is that we can talk about some of those areas where we have expertise. And so over the next couple of weeks, each of us gets to sit on the hot seat and do the interview process. And so today, Scott and I are going to interview Dr. Juanita Webb. And then next week, Scott gets grilled first and I will follow up with that. But Scott, Juanita, welcome to the broadcast. Welcome to the show. We've got people coming in. Let me just say, I will also be monitoring comments. So we have some questions. Like I said, today, first up is Dr. Juanita Webb. I'll read her bio so you know a bit about where she is coming from, but I have comments piped into this. So as you are joining us, as you are watching us, if you have an HR-specific question and you want to try to stump the expert, maybe we'll play a little game later and see if we can stump the expert. I will say, in the quickly changing world of HR, she has rules that were up to date as of like 20 minutes ago, and who knows, they could have changed in the last 20 minutes. So welcome to both of you. Juanita, why don't I read your introduction first so that people can start to think about what you're going to bring to the table, and then Scott, I'll turn it over to you if you've got anything you want to say before we kind of dive into the questions. So today, as I mentioned, we are interviewing Dr. Juanita Webb, who is the founder and president of J. Webb Consulting, a professional human resources consulting firm. She is a certified HR professional, both at the federal and the state of California level, because that has its own rules and regulations to follow, along with numerous other affiliations and designations she carries along the way. She is a highly skilled in executive coaching and investigations, HR best practices, training, strategic planning, conflict resolution, and succession planning. She is licensed in California as a private investigator, is a qualified manager, and she conducts training and investigations and is often used as an expert witness regarding harassment, discrimination, retaliation. And in addition to all of that, she advises organizations regarding drug and alcohol testing and policies and issues. Dr. Webb, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm looking for who this person is you're talking about. Sounds pretty good. But
a remarkable profile for yourself. And I can't wait to dive into these. We're going to ask you some questions in just a bit. But Scott, as we embark on the outset of this, knowing that you're facing the hot seat, or just out of curiosity, a question either for Dr. Webb or myself, or just a statement, a vote of confidence that you have for those watching today.
Sure. No, I'm excited to be here and having the opportunity to share with everyone. And I think Juanita's going to have some great stuff for us, because I think California is no doubt one of the most challenging states to do business in, right? Like everybody's seen in the headlines lately. Everybody's leaving. Tesla's leaving. Oracle, I think, was another company that announced it's leaving. So it's like all these companies are leaving. And, you know, it's got to do with a variety of reasons, but just doing business in California is so complicated. And we live in such a litigious society. I think what Juanita's going to share with us today is very important for all business owners, for people in 2021 that are looking to expand and add employees. It's, you know, it's a part of the business that many people don't want to think about. It's not exciting to think about all these rules and regulations, right? But it's one of those necessary things that all business owners especially as you start to take on employees have to address. So I'm excited to hear what Juanita has to share with us. And hopefully Juanita can help simplify some of the complexity. I think that's one of the big challenges many business owners I've talked with when it relates to HR issues. It's just the complexity that comes with all these laws and rules and regulations that we have to keep up with. So just look forward to hearing what you've got to share with us as we start this new year, 2021. Wow.
Yeah. We're actually there finally, right? We're out of 2020. Yeah. Hooray. We're out of 2020. So.
Okay. So first question, I'll go ahead and pop it up here on the screen, Juanita, that we want to make sure gets asked is we are in fact in this new year, and that means lots of laws have changed, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that as this interview unfolds. But maybe one of these first ones that is pressing for business owners now, this first kind of week back into a work schedule, is how does the change in minimum wage affect local businesses?
Well, I mean, most of us realize that we do, in California specifically, have to pay at least the minimum wage, the state minimum wage, to our employees. So many of the companies who are paying for the entry-level employees at minimum wage had an obligation to raise or increase that rate as of January 1st. But the important thing to realize is it's not just those entry-level employees who might be impacted by minimum wage. There's other considerations. For someone to be an exempt employee, they have to be paid at least twice minimum wage. So maybe even some of your executive team might need to be increased to make sure that they're in compliance with twice minimum wage. Employees who have to provide their own hand tools have to be paid at least twice minimum wage. If you have commissioned inside salespeople, their base rate each week has to be a minimum of 1.5 times minimum wage. So there's lots of implications, even though we say, oh, it's just minimum wage, not a big deal, it is. And to complicate it all, the state of California several years ago when they enacted SB 3 split it up for different size of organizations. So if you have 26 or more employees, you're at one rate of pay. If you have 25 or fewer employees, you're at a different minimum wage. So right now, effective January 1, those with 26 or more have to be paying a minimum of $14 per hour. Those with 25 or fewer have to be paying $13 per hour. You go, okay, great, we're good to go. And then you hire someone and now suddenly you are over 26 employees. Well, guess what? That means now you have to bump them up again. And even if that is only for a temporary period, you hire somebody for a temporary period and now you're over 26 employees, then everyone has to be bumped up. But just because you drop down below 26 doesn't mean you automatically get to reduce the wage. There has to be a notice period given to employees. So lots of complications like that. Then on top of that, not only does the state have a minimum wage, but many cities, counties, localities, municipalities have enacted their own local minimum wage. And so you have to be in compliance with that and pay whichever is greater. So real complications when it comes to even something simple like, oh, we've got a new minimum wage law.
You mentioned California and complicated in the same sentence. I don't know if that's ever been done before. You're breaking new ground here.
I know. I'm just such a leader in complications, right? Yeah. California is complicated. That's right. Yeah.
Along with that idea of some of these changing laws, do we need to update these posters every year? Kind of walk us through how some of these changes affect what we have to communicate to our employees.
Okay. And interestingly enough, we're still waiting on new labor law posters for 2021 because some of the laws weren't signed into effect until December 27th. And so the publishing companies are still in the midst of trying to get all of those new posters published so that companies can be in compliance. So do you have to replace them every year? Well, you do have to stay in compliance. The reason you need to do that and be aware of is the fact that there are fines and penalties associated with not correctly posting to the tune of up to $10,000 per day when you are not in compliance with the required labor law posters. there's probably, I'm guessing, about 20 federal laws and probably that many or more state laws that we have to be in compliance with as far as posting requirements. And like I said, those change. They can change throughout the year and have posting requirements that are updated and now have to be posted mid-year. So my recommendation is to just get on one of the services where they automatically send you the new ones every year. That way you're in good compliance. It may cost you a few dollars, but it definitely is worth the cost to avoid those penalties. But just remember, very important to realize that those all-in-ones, you know, the great big poster that has everything and it's all nicely packaged in on one big sheet of paper and you think, great, I'll just hang that up on the wall. That does not include everything that's required. So companies do need to be aware that there are other things outside of that all-in-one that are required, things like your wage order that is specific to your industry or your occupation. For a short period of time in at the beginning of each year, you do have to post, depending on your organization's, the industry or the organization that you're in, have to post your 300A log, which is a recap of all of the industrial injuries that you had the previous year. So there's lots of posting requirements like that that sometimes are short-lived, but that are still necessary and can invoke fines and penalties if you don't have them posted. So yes, I would recommend that you go ahead and get those replaced each year. It just, you know, saves you the hassle of worrying about it. The other thing to remember is don't just take it out of the tube or the folder that they send it to you in and stick it up on the wall. Make sure you fill in all the blanks where it asks for things like emergency phone numbers and paydays and pay periods. All of those things still need to be completed before you post it on the wall so that it's specific to your business. So,
Hey, Juanita, how does that work with, like, say, a virtual company that doesn't have an office? Like somebody like Justin, who's working out of, looks like his car right now. Does he have to put a
mobile combat station?
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Your mobile station. I like that. Yeah, that's an excellent question, Scott. Thank you for asking that because, yes, you do. And especially now during this pandemic with people working from home, you do have an obligation as an employer to post all of those posters in a workplace, in every workplace, in a conspicuous location, easily accessible by employees. So for someone who's working from their home, they need to have those posters available that they can see in their home. So some of the recommendations, making sure you do it electronically so that they have all of them, that you put them in one location, one folder, you send it to them, they have it all electronically. If it is separate locations, physical locations where employees are working, yes, you do have to have it in every location. We recommend for someone like Justin, maybe who is working out of their vehicle, or, you know, like a truck driver, something like that, just make a copy of all of them, stick them in a binder and give them the binder. And now they've been provided all of those posters and they have them available. You could do the same thing with those working from home and print them out and give them to them. Most of the posters are available electronically. Most of the sites that require, the laws that require them, provide a site where you can just print it out. And if anybody's interested, they can just contact me and I'll provide that information for them with all the new requirements and regulations. So,
yeah, thanks. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next question we want to get answered because laws are changing is what are the implications for this California Family Rights Act for small employers?
Yeah, and this is a big change. Just give you a little bit of history here. Federally, employers with 50 or more, and in California, employers with 50 or more have traditionally been covered by the Federal Family Rights Act, Family Medical Leave Act, and the California Family Rights Act. That was if you had 50 or more. So many employers did their best to stay under that magic number of 50 so they didn't have to deal with Family Medical Leave Act or California Family Rights Act. Several years ago, I believe it was 2019, don't quote me on that, but I believe it was 2019, California enacted the New Parent Leave Act, which was similar to the Family Medical Leave Act for baby bonding purposes. So someone who was a new parent could then take time off in California for employers who had 20 to 49 employees. So the state started moving that threshold down from 50 now down to 20, at least when it came to baby bonding and New Parent Leave Act. And then effective January 1 of this year, the state took another action to reduce the entire California Family Rights Act down to 5 employees or more. So even for those of us who are small employers and only have a few employees, this can have a major impact as far as what an employee is eligible for. And what is the Family Rights Act and what does that mean an employee is eligible for? Well, typically what that means is an employee is now guaranteed 12 weeks of leave time, a leave of absence for 12 weeks for certain reasons, things like a serious medical condition where you would have an obligation to hold that employee's job even if they were out for the full 12 weeks. Things like a serious medical issue for a family member. And in California, one of the changes that also occurred for the California Family Rights Act was a new expansion of the definition of who's considered a family member. And they've included now a child of any age. Used to be that there was a threshold that the child had to be below. Parent, spouse, parent-in-law, grandparent, grandchild, sibling, and domestic partner now are all covered under the California Family Rights Act. So if any of those individuals have a serious medical condition and you need to take time off to assist or take care of that person, that would be guaranteed to you in California, and the ability to do that, even if you only have 5 employees. An additional complication for that is that some of those family members that are covered under California are not covered under federal. So now it could be something where an employee might take 12 weeks off under the California Family Rights Act, let's say to take care of a family member that is not protected under federal, and then later would still have those 12 weeks available under federal law and could take 12 weeks off for their own serious health condition or to care for a different family member that wasn't covered under California law. So it really has posed a concern, not only for the small businesses, but even for large businesses where it could have an impact on how much time an employee can take off during the year. So, I mean, 12 and 12, that's 24 weeks. That's almost half a year that an employee could potentially take off and be guaranteed their job because it is protected leave. And so the employee is guaranteed their job back. Yeah. Now that is unpaid leave, just to clarify. The employer has no obligation to be paying the employee during that time, but the employee would be eligible for any benefits through the state, or they would be able to use any of their accrued vacation or sick time, those kinds of things, where you would then pay that out to them. So there can be some cost associated for the employer. So.
Excellent. Thank you. Let's turn an eye towards 2021 and some of these new COVID things. I think Scott has a question for you.
Yeah, Juanita, with COVID still impacting a lot of our businesses, will the federal government be continuing the Families First Coronavirus Response Act this year, 2021?
Well, and that was a decision that we were all waiting to hear and have been waiting on for weeks and weeks to know whether or not that was going to continue. And officially, the FFCRA ended as of December 31. However, there's always a however when it comes to HR issues. However, there is the new Consolidated Appropriations Act, which has extended some of the provisions under the FFCRA into 2021. So one of the things that an employer can do, and this is actually voluntary for employers, is to allow an employee who, well, let me back up and give you a little bit of history. Remember, under the FFCRA, there were two different kinds of leaves that were made available to employees. The first was 10 days of paid sick leave if they contracted COVID or they had to stay home to care for someone who had COVID. They were eligible for up to 10 days of pay at certain different rates of pay if they had to utilize those 10 days. The second type of leave that was available was up to 12 weeks of leave for a parent who needed to stay home to care for their children because their place of education or their child care facility was closed because of COVID. So what has continued into 2021 is those 10 days of paid sick leave. The government has said that if an employee still has remaining any of those 10 days, they can carry them over into 2021 for the first quarter of the year. Employers can voluntarily choose to allow employees to do that if they still had some of those 10 days available, which means in essence that the employers will still get the tax credit. That's why it's voluntary. It's up to the employer if they want to do that so that then they can pursue the tax credit that would be available to them to pay that for the employees. So that's one of the issues with regard to the COVID changes and the FFCRA. There's been a number of other ones that have also come along. There's been at least three new pieces of legislation that have come out. One federal and two California laws that have come out that have an impact with regard to COVID. Let's start with the two California ones first, and then we'll jump into the federal one. The first one was SB 1159, which came out several months ago, that requires employers to now report in writing any positive case of COVID. Whether it's work-related or not, they now have to report that to their workers' comp carrier. So for any employer, because in California you do have to have workers' comp insurance, if you have an employee who tests positive, whether they got it at work or they, you know, got it because of being at home or being exposed to someone during the holidays, you still have an obligation in writing to report that to your workers' compensation carrier within 3 business days. So pretty quickly, you have to make sure that you make that contact, let your workers' comp carrier know. On those individual cases, you do not have to necessarily report the employee's name who tested positive, but you do have to indicate where they were working, how many other people might have been exposed to them for purposes of kind of contact tracing. I'll get those words out. Within the workplace so that if an outbreak does occur, they can trace it back to the workplace and know that that's where it occurred. And then they even defined outbreak and what that means. And for employers with less than 100 employees, 100 or less, an outbreak at a specific place of employment, at least according to SB 1159, is 4 positives in a 14-day period. At a work site, and a major outbreak is considered 20 or more positive cases in a 30-day period. If you're a larger employer and you have more than 100 employees, then it's 4%. But that's SB 1159. There's another law, Cal OSHA emergency regulations that went into effect that amend that definition of what an outbreak is. And Cal OSHA says that an outbreak is 3 employees or more in a 14-day period. So just keeping track of which regulations apply and which one you're having to abide by has an impact as well.
Are those 14-day cycles, like, does that start over every new day, right? Is that a rolling 14 days that, or how do they determine a 14-day window?
It would be, so from the first reported case, then it would count, that would start that 14-day clock rolling. So if you had 3 cases in that 14-day period, but let's say you had, you know, you just had 1 case and a week later, you know, you have another case, then that next one is going to start that next 14-day period rolling to make sure whether or not you have an outbreak. You still have to report the positives to your workers' comp carrier so that they're aware of them, but in order to determine an outbreak situation, it would be within that rolling 14-day period from the first outbreak, or for the first positive. So, all right, so that was number one on the 3 pieces of legislation. The second one is AB 685, and this one came out later in the year. And this is where it requires that we give written notification to every employee if there's a positive case in the workplace. So if it's determined that one of your employees has a positive case, is tested positive, then as the employer, I have to notify every employee in the organization that there's a possibility they might have been exposed. I don't have an obligation, and it's not suggested or recommended to include any information. In fact, it's almost prohibited to include any information about the person who tested positive. That would be a HIPAA violation of disclosing medical information. So we don't want to include the name of the person who was tested positive, but we do have to let all of the employees know that an employee has tested positive. So then they have the opportunity to go and be tested if they feel they need to, or for the employer to have to provide testing, no cost testing during work hours for all employees who've been exposed. So again, some real implications for employers and what they have to do. That notice that you have to give has to be within one business day. So it's a very quick turnaround. Employers need to be prepared. They need to have that notice ready to go. So as soon as they get notice that an employee has tested positive, they can just shoot that out, and it does have to be in writing. It can be an email, it can be a letter, it can be a text message, however you would normally interact or communicate with your employees, but it does have to be in writing. They said a telephone call is not sufficient and a verbal notice at a meeting is not sufficient. It does have to be in writing because there's a number of requirements of what needs to be in that letter. As far as encouraging the employee to, you know, get tested, contact their local health department for specific regulations for their local area, what rights and benefits are available to the employees. All of that has to be included, whether it's sick pay benefits or workers' comp benefits, or even statements about we won't retaliate against you, or we're not going to discriminate against you because you've go and have this testing or because you've tested positive. All of those things have to be included in the letter, as well as what your protocols are as an employer to clean and sanitize the area where the employee worked, making sure that all of that's taken care of. And you have to disclose that in that letter to the employee so that they know what steps you're taking or what your protocols are for assuring that they are safe in the workplace. So just a number of things. And then also they have to keep that letter for 3 years. So more record-keeping requirements posed for the employers as well when it comes to all of this.
And so they have to, I want to understand some of those rules because it seems like they matter quite a bit to stay in compliance.
Right.
A certain number of positive cases anytime within 14 days means we may be defined as an outbreak, and a letter has to go out every time there's a positive case or just after the first one.
No, every time. So every time an employee tests positive, any of your employees test positive, now you have to send that notice out effective January 1 within one business day to all employees so that they know now someone has tested positive. On the other side of that coin, well, how do we then determine which employees really might have been truly exposed? You as the employer need to do your contact tracing in dealing with the employee who tested positive. You know, who were you around? Where, you know, what departments did you work in? Where were you, you know, talking, what employees were you talking with? The standard is, were they in contact with anyone within 6 feet for more than a cumulative total of 15 minutes, 24-hour period, and specifically the high risk exposure period, which is right when the person starts, you know, to begin to experience symptoms and that kind of thing. But an employer has an obligation to check that out with the person who's been tested. You know, who were you talking with? Who did you work with? Who did you have meetings with yesterday or the day before? Those kinds of things. And then making sure specifically that those individuals are aware that they may have had contact with that person, but not naming anyone. May have had contact with someone who was exposed.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. In a small employer, that's going to be pretty obvious because now the person's going to be gone for 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. Hard to notice when if you're got five employees, one of them just doesn't show up for 2 weeks.
We kind of know who it was, but we still can't inform them as employers. We still can't expose that information. So yeah.
I don't feel like you've given us enough new stuff we have to follow as business owners. So let me just go ahead and throw this question up. Scott, I'll let you field the last one, but it's there. What other new regulations do we have to know about as we start this new year?
Yeah, well, there are a number of other new regulations. In fact, I've got two webinars that I'm going to be attending starting tomorrow and Wednesday. Today is Tuesday. I'm going to attend it Wednesday and Thursday of this week. To hear all of the new regulations and all of the new case law that has come out, because there have been a number of changes that have occurred in addition to all of the new legal requirements. So it's really important for employers to stay up on that. I would encourage any employer that can to take advantage of those kinds of webinars that are out there and available. Many law firms provide them. You can usually get them through the Chamber of Commerce in your local area, but I would strongly encourage employers to sign up for that. They're usually fairly reasonable. Even the SHRM, the Kern County Society for Human Resource Management, will be providing one this week that you can sign up for and be able to hear those updates. And those usually come from an attorney. They provide the legal part of that. I am not an attorney, so I can't give legal advice. And all of this information that I've been sharing, obviously, is just my insights and is not legal advice. So obviously, if you've got concerns or issues, you need to make sure you contact your attorney. But just a couple of other things that have come up. There's even specific changes in some of these laws. And I really didn't finish on the COVID ones. There was one more. That's the Cal OSHA regulation that went into effect, and this is a big one. It requires a written COVID prevention program for all employers. So if you're an employer here in the state of California, just like having an injury and illness prevention program, you also now have an obligation to have a COVID prevention program. There are templates available. Again, contact me. I can give you all of the information you need to be able to do that, but it is something you have to have. So that if OSHA comes in, you can demonstrate, here's the COVID prevention program that I have. In addition, some of the changes under the Cal OSHA regulations clarify what is considered an incident and when you have to report that related to COVID-19. So anyone who does experience a COVID-19 illness or injury, you do have to report a hospitalization. If the employee was hospitalized for inpatient treatment within 24 hours of being exposed at work. So let's say you did have a positive, you sent the letter out in one business day, you did notify your workers' comp carrier within the 3 days, and now it's been 24 hours and another employee comes down with it and they end up going to the hospital. Well, you now have an obligation to notify Cal OSHA within 24 hours after that exposure. So very important. And then if an employee should happen to die because of a COVID exposure, anytime within 30 days of being exposed at work, then you have an obligation to notify Cal OSHA within 8 hours, just as you do for any death in the workplace, but also with regard to COVID. Again, there were some specific things for agriculture. There's some new information that came out both in English and Spanish through Cal OSHA that are requirements for ag industries. And so I would really encourage anyone who is in the ag industry to look into those. You can go on the Cal OSHA website to get those. There were some supplemental sick leave ordinances that came out about COVID. And remember that a variety of cities and locales, counties, those kinds of things, have their own requirements. So always make sure you're in compliance with whatever is the most generous to the employees, okay? Those are the things that you're going to need to make sure that you're doing. A couple of other programs or laws that changed this year. This one is specifically for HR professionals, but also for supervisors. If you have minors that work for you, HR professionals and supervisors have now been designated as mandated reporters with regard to any type of suspected or observed abuse or neglect of children, or any type of sexual abuse that they might have been exposed to. And so now there's going to need to be training provided to those individuals. So if you do have minors working for you, again, some additional new regulations that have come out. And then don't forget also, and this was a law that came out several years ago, but it has an impact each year, and that's the CalSAVERS program. There was a compliance deadline that passed on September 30th for organizations with 100 or more workers. But those of you who may have less than 100, maybe you've got more than 50, so you've met that threshold, so CFRA and FMLA apply to you. But now also the CalSAVERS deadline is June 30th of this year, where you will have to make sure that you're in compliance, and then employers with five or more employees will need to comply by June 30th of 2022. So some additional ones that have come out. Couple of other ones. There were some agricultural wage order changes. In the past, agricultural workers could work up to 10 hours per day without receiving overtime. And that has been scaling down. The number of hours has been scaling down as to what is considered overtime. And effective this year, it is now 8.5 hours for an employee who's in agriculture to receive overtime pay, or 45 hours in a week if you have 26 or more employees that relate to the agricultural situation. And then there's two other ones that have an impact, and this one is specifically for HR people, again, as far as something you're going to have to comply with, and that is the equal pay reporting. For employers who have 100 or more employees, every year they're required to file what's called an EEO-1 report. That's an equal opportunity employer report about the number of employees they have in different races, ethnicities, sex, that kind of thing. Now, the state of California is requiring that organizations who have to file that report also have to provide pay data based on race, ethnicity, and sex. And so that all has to be reported to the state of California by March 31st of this year. And then lastly, there's been some changes with regard to discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. For all of you employers, you had an obligation by January 1st to have trained all of your employees. You do have a responsibility to provide 1 hour of harassment prevention training to all employees every 2 years. And for supervisors, you have to provide 2 hours of interactive training every 2 years. And so there was a deadline for that. That was January 21. And so now it'll be every 2 years. If you haven't done it, you still can get that done, obviously, and can still meet at least the requirements, depending on when the last time was that you did the training. So if you did training in 2019, you would be able to do it again in 2021. And then lastly, just that there was an extension of the time frame for an employee to report a concern of retaliation or discrimination to the labor commissioner for any regulations that the labor commissioner or the Department of Labor Standards Enforcement would typically manage or handle. In the past, it was 6 months. Now it's a year. So there's been an expansion of that, so employees can continue to report even past the 6 month time frame. So, and the statute of limitations for a harassment concern changed, I believe, last year, January 1st of 2020. It used to be 1 year was the statute of limitations. The statute of limitations now for presenting a harassment concern is 3 years. So lots of changes over the last couple of years that have occurred in so many areas, and then add COVID on top of that. So, yeah.
We'll have this figured out by the end of the first week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're only on day 5, right? And we've already got having to do all of this. So,
yeah, exactly. So our last question, if you guys have comments or questions you want to ask, plug those in and we'll present those to Juanita here when we finish up. What are some of the other important dates for filing, reporting, things that business owners need to keep in mind as we get into the new year?
Well, there's just a whole slew of, you know, dates and timing and those kinds of things. Most employers know that they have an obligation to file, you know, their 1099s and their W-2s and get all of that out. You know, in January, it has to be done and has to be submitted by February 28th of every year. Again, the March 31 deadline for the new equal pay reporting, that's going to be a big deadline for those in California who meet that threshold of 100 employees or more. There's some of the requirements for financial reporting if you provide under the Obama Act, the Healthcare Act, some of the forms that have to be submitted for your employees. Again, if you offer certain types of healthcare and you have the requisite number of full-time equivalent employees, you do have to report some of those. So there's just a whole slew of deadlines and changes that occur, and you know, we need to make sure we're all in compliance with those. So,
yeah, great. Yeah, a lot of good info, Juanita. It's doing business in California is very complicated, right? So I can see how someone like you can simplify that, and I think that is that to me is a great resource for folks that who might be listening to this. To know that, you know, most of us are not passionate like you are probably about this kind of stuff. We're passionate about running our businesses, right? We want to run our businesses. We don't want to worry about contact tracing and all these laws and all the craziness that goes along with doing business in California. So how can people, what's the best way for people to reach out to you and connect with you and just seek your help or your insight into helping them stay in compliance with the laws and help them to focus on the stuff that's growing their business and bring someone like you into the picture to help them with all this legal stuff that is required to do business in California?
Great. Thanks for asking, Scott. I'm happy to help. I always give a complimentary consult for the first contact. So feel free to contact me. My direct contact information is, and I think Justin's probably going to pop it up on the screen there for you in just a moment, but my email address is drjuanita.webb@gmail.com. That's the easiest way to get in touch with me, or pick up the phone and give me a call. My phone number is area code 661-747-4386. And so I'm happy to help. For those who are local employers, I deal with individuals out of state as well and can help with requirements in other states. And so if you have locations in multiple states, that's important to be aware of, that you do have to comply with the laws in each state in regard to all of these issues as well. So it's not just California. There are other states that have some requirements as well. So,
yeah, so awesome.
Happy to help.
Yeah. Do we have any questions, Justin, before we talk about our next session next Tuesday? There's Juanita's phone number there.
There we go. I got her phone number popped up as well. So there's her email and her phone number. I don't see any questions coming in. So what I'd like to do is tease about Scott. Tease about what Scott is going to talk about.
I know a good harassment class you need to go to. If you're going to be Scott, I know a great harassment class you need to go to.
So Scott, why don't you tell us a bit about your background and expertise and kind of maybe what we can look forward to next week when you are in the hot seat, and then I'll wrap up again by talking about the mastermind as we wrap up this lunchtime meeting today.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Justin. Yeah. So my background is primarily in process improvement, but it's also in personal finance. So what I'm going to talk about next week is the connection between business performance and personal finance, because what we're learning probably over the last maybe decade or so is that our personal finance problems, like debt and just issues dealing with our personal finances, like all of the problems we have in our lives, we don't leave those at the door when we go into our work environment or when we go into wherever that environment might be today. Like for me here in my home office, those things come with us and they can have a dramatically negative effect on a business's performance. So I'm going to be talking about process improvement or business performance and how personal financial issues can affect the performance of a business and what employers and even employees can do to address those issues and those challenges and give help to employees and things that employers and employees can do to take control of their personal financial issues, but then also for employers, what can they do for their employees to help them become better stewards of their financial issues that leads to better business performance.
Yeah, excellent. And so I've started to see, I'll share this since you're here. People are posting the memes about getting their stimulus check, but then it's like, you know, one free McDonald's cone. Everybody's finances are hurting this year, and we have lots of questions about what do I do with my rent or my mortgage or my student loans, and how do I continue to try to breathe in the midst of all of that craziness? So I think, Scott, the word that you're going to bring to us next week is going to be not just a timely one, but a timeless one. And I'm excited to hear what you have to say as you speak out of that expertise.
Capitalize on that, Justin, for just a second, because Scott's absolutely correct. The impact that has in the workplace can be devastating. And, you know, the distraction and the inability of employees to function and to be able to perform their work, especially in this crisis situation, is just compounded because of all the financial issues. So it is also having an impact in the work environment, and we can, you know, throw in some information about that next week as well. So.
Absolutely. I think Scott's expertise and insights and some of the work that he has done with some of his clients is going to help bring a lot of insight and help to people. And that, remind me, that next one is next Tuesday at noon as well, correct? Yep. 1 week from today at the same time. Scott is in the hot seat. So if you have questions about process improvement, about employee or personal finances, about business finances, Scott is the guy to talk to here in Bakersfield for that. So really quickly, as we wrap up today, we want to give you maybe a few minutes to eat your lunch in silence, although I'm sure you've enjoyed listening to us. This business mastermind, where we are at is, as I stated at the top of this interview, is that based through some of our own personal interactions with our client bases and our social circles, sensing a need for a business mastermind of like-minded professionals who can not only ask a panel of experts, the three of us that you see on your screen, but have a group of camaraderie where they can go and ask questions of their peers, of fellow business owners, of other people that are trying to say, how do you personally, as a business owner, handle difficult employees or the onboarding process or when you need to fire or how you ask someone gracefully that maybe you should retire. And so what we want to do is help you navigate those waters with a group of like-minded people. So if you're interested, you've seen Juanita's contact information. Mine, I'll give mine, and then Scott, allow you to give your contact information. Easiest way to get in touch with me is justin@justinhebert.com. And then my cell phone is area code 303-947-9730. Scott, how, as people anticipate next week, can they get in touch with you if they have questions right now?
Yeah, the best way is probably just via text or give me a call. And my number is 661-204-9448. Or they can email me too. It's my email address is Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at cornerstonecoachingllc.com.
Excellent. Dr. Webb, since today was your time in the hot seat, I want you to end. So take 30 seconds. And as we wrap up today's session, give us a word of encouragement, a word of wisdom. Give us something in the midst of all of these changing laws to continue us to push on and fight the good fight as business owners and lead our employees well.
Well, I would capitalize on what Scott said earlier about moving out of California, but probably not the best suggestion for businesses who are in California and need to function here. But my encouragement would be to tap into the resources that you have available. You are experts in your field, in running your business, in the products or the services that you provide, but you need help and assistance in all of these other areas. So tap into the experts. We can be assistance to you. We can be on call for you. When you've got those issues, don't try to handle it yourself. It's much easier for us to walk you through it on the front side than it is to try to solve the problem afterwards. So just encourage you to really take advantage of the opportunity that you have, and, you know, get involved so you can get good information each week from us.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Webb. Thank you, Dr. Thor, for joining us today, for joining me today, for being a part of this. And I will get the link and the replay posted. So if you are watching us on replay, be sure to take notes. I will also get Dr. Thor's link live soon so that you can start submitting questions for next week. But thank you both for joining us, and we will see you guys next week.